Hello, it's Jeff. Just before we get to the show, just a friendly reminder to hit follow or subscribe on your podcast app so it's downloaded and ready to go. Okay, if you're into any of the following genres, you've come to the right place. Funk, jam band, comedy, Americana, Canadiana, rock, folk, pop, alternative, indie, blues, comedy. And if you drill down that much deeper, you could call them a banjo funk rock jam band. But don't get too hung up on the banjo. It's not Mumford & Sons, although I do love that band. It's actually a bit more Sanford & Son. What was his son's name, Dave? Do you know?
I don't know.
Lamont. For fans of, but not limited to, The Hip and Zappa and The Police and Fish and The Grateful Dead and Ween and... But don't get too hung up in any of that either, because they also sound very much like themselves. Here for the second time on the Records and Rockstars podcast, from north of Toronto, where the hills roll into Georgian Bay, Glacial Erratic is the band. Their tallest member is the banjo and guitar-wielding lead singer, Dave Loopstra. When you walked in the door, I thought, I know you've been here before into this room for this podcast, and it was quite a long time ago.
3 years.
Pre-pandemic.
Pandemic, I felt like it was a wrinkle in time. Are you familiar with that book from when you were younger?
No, tell me more.
So the concept is, if you picture like a wrinkle, you know, if you picture time as linear and then there's a wrinkle in it, and then inside the wrinkle all this stuff happens, but then you kind of come out of it and you're sort of where you left off, more or less. It feels a little bit like that for me.
Okay, pros and cons of pandemic. If you had to pick the greatest thing that came out of that for you?
When it hit, I loved it. It felt exciting, to be honest. It felt like an Armageddon. It felt like the end of the world. And I felt excited about that just because there was something exciting going on. Not that in any stretch I wanted the end of the world or I wanted an Armageddon or anything like that, but it was just, there was something exciting in the air. And we got super close, you know, as a family. We were already close. And one of the things about the pandemic, some people were like, oh, you know, it forced us to be together. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But, you know, that should be a priority anyway, I guess. But for us, I loved waking up and having nothing to do all day. And I could just play banjo or play guitar. And that was really, really fun for about 2 months. And then after that, I went nuts. Had some of my total darkest moments. Had times when I was just sitting at my desk feeling this rage and not knowing how to deal with it or where it came from just being stuck in an unnatural type of environment, you know? And I realized, you know, how much I love society and how much I love seeing people and how much I love the way things are constructed.
What do you think it did for the part of your life that is music?
I think we came out a lot stronger. I was able to practice a lot as a band, you know, when we were allowed to, you know, we practiced a lot. Again, it was like a wrinkle in time. It was like, yeah, we came into it and we had just put together a couple of shows and it felt like everything was happening for us and we were taking off and we had some great gigs lined up and it felt like it was going to be a setback. And now it's sort of like it didn't happen. I don't ever think about it anymore.
What's the best thing about it being done in real practical terms?
Well, certainly for me, and I can say for other people, is, you know, not taking things for granted. I mean, here in our little town, we live in this town of Thornbury, and it's got a really vibrant music scene and a really strong sense of community in this tiny little town. And when all that shut down and everybody started hating each other because everybody went on these Facebook chat groups and just argued. So pointless. The amount of energy that goes into a Facebook argument is so absolutely pointless. And so what a terrible thing that was. And you know, so we were a year into the pandemic and I'm like, wow, can you believe a year ago how good we had it? You know, every Wednesday night there's an open mic at the Bruce Wine Bar, which is just downtown Thornbury. Down the road is Collingwood. There's all this live music that happens. I don't want to ever take that for granted. You know, parties build community. I'm a big believer in parties and getting together as a community. And
well, you know, when I used to work in corporate media, I had staff. There was great value getting your staff together outside of the boardroom, outside of the meeting rooms, and going for beers or going for bowling or going for whatever, and just getting to the heart of who somebody is.
I love working at home. You know, it's tempting just to, you know, stay home, you make another coffee, you hang out in whatever clothes you're wearing, you don't have to shave or whatever. But I really love the mornings, you know, get up, go to the cafe, and then go to the office, see a bunch of people. I feel better as a result of it, and I'm less inclined to get high in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Or something, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Although there's something to be said for getting high in the middle of the day, you know, the creativity that comes out of it. If I do shut off the phone and I take a few hours and just get quite high on some cannabis.
Some sativa to get your creative juices flowing.
A lot of people will dismiss the creativity that arises out of cannabis. I feel like it's a little bit in the culture. You know, like, I mean, you'll see parodies on people who are high, right? And or, you know, you'll think of something and they'll say, oh, did you think of that when you were high or whatever, right? But truly, true great things emerge from a change in perspective. I think a change in perspective is so important. Being able to make really good decisions and have really good ideas come from being in a meditative state and seeing things from a different perspective. I'm singing or I'm playing or I'm writing stuff down or whatever. I mean, have to be careful and use it at the right times.
When you're with friends that get you and you get them and you smoke a bit of dope, you can talk about anything. There's a comfort zone there. You're not calling up clients after doing a wicked straight of weed. They're like, hey, let's talk.
Have some self-doubt like halfway through. Like, not just self-doubt, like doubting your entire existence and reality. Like, what is real? Like, that, those kind of thoughts, you know? Yeah. Which do enter my head like 3 or 4 times a day, you know, the whole reality thing. Like, it's so crazy that any of this even exists. I do like the whole concept of like things don't really matter, you know, like not taking anything really all that like too seriously. And I also do believe in an afterlife, not in the sense, you know, of a religious type of afterlife. But when my mom passed away, this voice came to me the next day and she said, Dave, everybody's so sad, but it's so happy here. And that to me is all around. And I feel like life is so cheap. Like life really is so cheap and not just human life. Like, I mean, bugs, like they get smushed every day and other animals and like how brutal animal life is really like, this past summer, sorry if I'm babbling here. I'm also trying to talk faster because I realized I did the stand-up comedy set recently and it was filmed and there was a video done and I watched the video after. I'm like, I talk so slow. I'm like, I have to speed it up. And you know, I'm tall, right? So sometimes I think I'm a cross between a giraffe and a sloth. And I want to add a little tiger into that. So I'm going to try and speak a little more quickly. But this voice came in my head. It was my mom's voice. And she said, you know, Dave, everybody's so sad, but it's so happy here. And I feel that because life is so cheap and because it's such a brutal existence, really, that potentially it's just an adventurous place, but there's this other realm. When I'm chatting with really religious people and they ask me what my spirituality is, you know, because theirs might be more, well, it's Jesus or whatever it is, and no judgment on any of that. But for me, it's just impossible to explain. It's just simply a feeling, you know, and it's the kind of thing I feel like spirituality is the kind of thing that you can just get in a heartbeat. You don't need to spend years studying it. You just get it all of a sudden.
And you're a positive guy, which helps a lot if you're a pessimist. Or a depressive, which some of us fight with, it doesn't do you any favors.
That's really, really true. Yeah. And I'm speaking from a really privileged position. And that privileged word I find to be very interesting because when I say privilege, I mean not only the obvious privileges of being a tall white guy, I mean that I had a mom who loved me. Full stop right there. Anybody who has a mom that loves you is privileged, really, in this environment, in this society. But I also had a dad that loved me. And so I had two of that. So extremely, like I was extremely privileged, you know, to grow up in a loving environment. And it sets you up for success.
I like what you said. And I understand what you said about life being cheap. Cheap meaning fleeting. I will do anything to avoid hitting a squirrel that runs across the street. I will crash the car practically into another car if I'm not going to kill a living, breathing thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. I know you feel that.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
remember that story years ago where I think that when she was in court, it was because she didn't seem to exhibit enough remorse or regret or feeling. She stopped on the highway because ducks were crossing and she didn't want to hit them.
Oh,
like a mom and all her ducks. Babies.
Really?
And I would have stopped too.
Uh-huh.
But she was charged because somebody behind her crashed and died.
Oh no.
So she was charged with, I guess, probably manslaughter.
Oh no.
And so a lot of us were on her side. I mean, you know, what if a baby was lying on the road? You know, it's not just ducks, it's a baby. Or what if, well, whatever the case. You're supposed to be at a safe distance where you can stop for whatever it is.
It's so true. And it's so interesting how, as humans, our perspective on life, you know, obviously favors humans over other animals.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, the vegetarian thing, which, again, no judgment on any of that. But I think that, you know, all living things can feel, but we just don't perceive it. You know, and I was in the forest the other day and I was like, I think there's probably so much wellness that I could just breathe in right now. If you're open to it, then you'll receive it. Because if you think about that in practical terms, there's probably a lot of love that you could get from people. Or let's say, you know, someone loves you, but you're not open to it, then you actually don't receive it. So I feel like opening to things, then you receive them. So I feel like there's levels of consciousness that we're just not aware of, and we're not open to it, but it does exist.
It does. And sometimes from the most unlikely of places, to your point, the quote from Carlos Santana when I spoke to him in Las Vegas, I said to him, and I know the reality of the collaborations that he did with various artists. Oftentimes they were artists that were also A&R'd by Clive Davis, who discovered Carlos Santana, and oftentimes they were artists on the same label that he was recording for, but go a little deeper than that. And I said, how do you choose the people with whom to work? He said, Jeff, I look for the open flowers.
Oh, yeah, right? Nice. Yeah, nice, absolutely. Right? Yeah.
To your point about being open, he's like, not everybody's ready to collaborate or be in a room to create anew. They're kind of doing their own thing, or they're insular, or they're protected, or they have walls up. But the open flowers are the ones that you want to work with.
Right, absolutely, yeah. good on him for being able to perceive that. You know, that's kind of a key thing. Probably an intuitive thing, you know.
It would be, and he's always been very in touch with his own spirituality, and his artistry is beyond, obviously. So you've got a new record, and it's really, really good. And I had the privilege, much to my surprise, you guys, Glacial Erratic, called me and said, hey, we want to play you some songs. So we got together in the studio in your rehearsal space, and we listened together. We all had headphones on, which is the best way to hear stuff. And we went track by track, and I made notes for each of the songs. And I do this for bands that I like and find great potential in what they're doing, particularly at a developmental stage. I mean, you're not a band that's been around for 30 years. You're a band that's had a couple of records. And when I really like you live, so I thought, I want to go and do this. The process was such that we listened. I gave you some feedback. You weren't done the final mixes yet. I'm very much about simplicity and getting to the heart of the matter. And so I tried to help you, I think, get to the heart of each of these songs. You're going to play a couple live here in a minute. And I'd love to throw to four of them, maybe, so that we have a 6-song Glacial Erratic special here on the podcast. What's your memory of that day? Because we all look at things a little differently. Even though it was the same things happened, we see them differently.
I loved it. It was so valuable. You gave us such incredible feedback. One of the bits of feedback you gave was sing with some more confidence on a couple of tracks. So we actually re-recorded those. Like, own it. You know, own the vocals. I also loved, you know, sitting in that room and getting over this sort of... it was outside of my comfort zone to listen to something that I had produced and then have you listen to it and have even the others listen to it, you know, because I hold the others in the band in such high regard, you know, and they're listening to me singing, you know, and you know, they hear me on stage, like Mitch, our drummer, will hear me on stage, and, you know, but it's different because we're all partying there, but now he's actually like listening to my recorded voice. So I had to get over that, where we're all sitting there, you know, with headphones on, and where do you look? I had to get over that. Like, do you look someone in the eye, you know, while you're listening to the song? So I actually laid down on the ground and closed my eyes. But then the song would end and we would have a discussion. So many things came up, you know. It was like, oh, that minor 7 chord that's in the third bar, let's bring that forward more and have it repeat.
Sometimes a chord that you play, do more of that, repeat that. It draws you back to the song. It makes you want to hit play again. It makes you want the radio station to play it more often. It makes you jump to that track on the record. And you had a lot of those hooks. So sometimes when I'd hear one and it wasn't coming back repeatedly, do more of that. I guess confidence is the word, isn't it? To step in and to lean in fully, because it is good. It'll be that much better if you believe in it.
That's right. Yeah, like really committing, right? Like, so if you're an athlete and you're playing a sport and you really want to win, you know, you really have to commit. But in music, you know, it's a performance thing. So for me, it's way outside of my comfort zone because I'm not always like, hey, everybody, you know, look at me. And I really realize that's a really important part of it. Like, you really got to, the most successful musicians and performers, as you know, they give it 100%. And so I got to get over this whole sitting around the poker table thing, or where you're with a bunch of dudes, you wouldn't act like that. You know, there's a machoism thing, you know, with men is, you know, to be subdued and to be quiet and to, you know, not be, you know, flamboyantly expressive, you know. But as a musician, you got to step away from that and be flamboyantly expressive. So
you have to own it. You have to play the part that you wrote for yourself.
Yes.
Because you have X minutes on stage when you do a show, particularly if it's multiple bands in the same bill. You got your 40 minutes or whatever the time is, and you got to go out and give it.
Yeah, you do. And you have to leave all that behind. And to be honest, that's something that I'm working on.
I want to talk behind their backs, the other three guys in the band, in a minute too. And first of all, let's go to a song.
So we're dropping a single. It's the first song on the album too. Perfect. Perfect. And it's inspired by the that saying, you know. I feel like, I don't know if it's a Grey County thing. We live in Grey County, Ontario. You hear a lot of dudes, you know, a lot of construction worker guys, a lot of farmer type, a lot of dudes driving pickup trucks, and they'll be like, yeah, meet me at the Tim Hortons at 2:00. Perfect. See you there, you know. It's like, but I don't know if that's a North American thing, but I certainly, you'd ask me once when I first heard that term. And it was on a construction site in 1997, and I was like, yeah, I was a laborer, so I was like, yeah, I'll move all these 2x4s over there, and the boss was like, perfect.
Right.
So then the chord is on that song. It's this anticipation chord, you know, it's almost there, it's like something's coming, and it's perfect for that song.
and spell the name of the song.
P-R-F-C-T.
Perfect. It's Glacial Erratic. There it is, new for Glacial Erratic, the first cut from a record called Rock and Lowell.
Yeah. the engineer and producer of the album, Josh Maitland, he came up with the album title.
So that's a play on LOL.
That's right.
Right? Yeah, it's perfect. Well, now we're talking behind his back. Josh Maitland has a studio called Red Room Recordings.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's where we listened to the record before it was finalized. And he's a hell of a bass player on all these songs and a hell of a producer and a great mind. He's a bit of a freak show.
He's a genius. He's an engineer by trade, certainly a sound engineer. He's into some time travel right now. I don't even know. I can't even explain it, but it's amazing. The places that he goes, it's called remote viewing. So he's able to, you know, get into a meditative state and get on a molecular level and visit other places in the world or even visit the future, which I do believe in. I do, you know, because I think, you know, everything's fluid. He blows my mind with how talented he is. As a matter of fact, I will say that, you know, Josh on bass, Merrick on guitar, Mitch on drums, it's unreal to watch these guys. They leave me in the dust. Like, they will start jamming and I'll be like, I have no idea what I can contribute. You know, sometimes I feel like Yoko Ono. I don't know if you ever see those videos. Like, I saw one recently on YouTube or on Instagram where the sound engineer cut Yoko Ono's mic off because she was contributing, but she was just making these screaming noises. And I think the Beatles were playing with Chuck Berry at the time. And then you see where the sound engineer cuts off her mic because she's just making these really bad noises. You know, she's screaming. She thinks it sounds great. And I actually thought it sounded decent, you know, on the Instagram reel that I saw.
I saw it too. Chuck Berry has got John Lennon and John's band on with them. And Yoko starts her vocal acrobatic routine. And, you know, if you get into the headspace, to your point, if you get into that sort of avant-garde headspace that she was in and which attracted John to her in the first place, there's some value to it. However, I use sparingly, I always say. It's like a spice. You don't put the whole jar of spice in.
Right, right. It's funny.
But she
right?
had the whole jar going in.
That's
and,
right.
And Chuck did a little eye roll here and there. But he was pretty respectful. I thought Chuck would have like stopped playing and went, I can't work with this.
Right, right. Yeah, he did keep playing. There was like, I don't know if it was you that posted it, but it was like, it went to slow motion cut away on his face. He had this sort of funny expression on his face, like between shock and being aghast. But I've also heard Linda McCartney in the background of Hey Jude and on a live recording, and it was terrible. So
when Wings toured and Linda went out, because Paul and Linda knew that the secret to a successful marriage was sleep in the same bed more often than not. So that's why she basically went out and became a keyboard player, backing vocalist. So they would isolate her vocals, people that were detractors of Linda's. And some of them were really bad, so she was low on the mix.
Right, right.
I mean, when you're on stage with a Beatle who knows how to sing, I mean, we'd all sound bad.
Right, yeah, right. And how daunting would that be? So sometimes that's the way that I feel. But because they're so talented, you know, these guys like Josh is just unreal. So Merrick, our lead guitarist, he joined our band last April. And unbelievable. And I will say, I've watched a lot of contemporary North American and European guitar virtuosos and all the big names from Jimmy Page to Jimi Hendrix to Joe Bonamassa you know, Kim Thayil of Soundgarden, all my favorite guitarists. And Merrick is my absolute, like, he's the one that blows my mind the most. So for me to say, and I don't say that lightly, I hold these guys in such high revere. I have never seen anybody play the guitar like Merrick. It is unbelievable.
He took what was a fun trio and made it a great band.
Exactly. And so we start jamming and he'll just be like, rawr, rawr, rawr. I'm like, I have no idea what key he's in. I can't even, like I say, I start sounding like Yoko Ono that when I try and play along. So I'll let the fellas do their thing. But Josh, he picks up right away and he's playing along. And of course, Mitch, because he the rhythm's there and jamming's fun. But you know, if you write a song, You want to be able to play it again. You want to be able to add some structure to it, because just jamming off the cuff and riffing and all that's fun, but it won't go anywhere unless you are like, okay, well, let's do this part, then that part, then that part, and then make it a song.
Focus.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, and I'm not ashamed to admit this. I heard Frank Zappa say once, like, no solo of his that he ever does is the same. You know, but for me, it's different. I need to have structure. I need to know what I'm coming into. I need to know when that changes or whatever. But what we'll say to America is we'll be like, okay, so we're going to do this part, that part, that part. Then we're going to have a big open jam after. And as long as I know the key, I can play some rhythm behind it. And then we'll let him go wherever he wants. And him and he and Mitch and Josh will take it to this other galaxy.
What a lot of bands that love to jam and jam effectively do is not make great records. When I say a lot of bands, I mean a lot of bands that we've never heard of. But the live show is the place where your fans like the record, they're showing up, and they're the ones that can come on the journey with you and follow you along for the extended version that has solos that aren't played the same twice ever, because they already like the song on the record. The live setting is your place to really shine and really exercise that muscle that is jamming. Bands like Fish know how to do that. Bands like the Grateful Dead were the originators of that, and loads of live bands. There's countless ones that you love their songs, but you know you're not getting that when you go to the show. You're getting that plus bonus. Yeah,
exactly,
the extended version. You know, the Midnight Rambler you got on stage wasn't the Midnight Rambler you got on the record. It was the live version that really became the hit because they did it so well.
I love that. I love that. And that's kind of what we're gunning towards, you know.
And it's working.
Oh, thank you.
I can't wait to see you again soon. Merrick Barlow, lead guitar player, vocalist, he really did change the complexion of the band. You were already a lot of fun to see. But he gave the band room to grow, and he gave the band this great tone and ability on lead guitar. What's the really good example of this album that you've put out that underscores his contribution as a guitar player to the band that we can hit play on now?
Well, okay, so we had recorded a lot of these songs before Merrick joined. So he plays a guitar solo on Perfect and on French Song.
It's Glacial Erratic. I'm going to hit play on it right now.
Comme si, comme ça. Très bien. Ma Montréal. Bonjour, je m'appelle David, je l'aime les Français, je l'aime les flocons de mes, vous de l'ange, la bibliothèque, vous blondes les autobus, qu'est-ce que c'est le Montréal? Qu'est-ce que c'est le Radio Canada? Radio Canada. Salut, comment t'appelles-tu? Où est la ponca? salut. Comment allez-vous? Pour les services en français, puis sans lemon chat, tabernacle, cats on the rack.
There it is, Glacial Erratic. It's the new album, Rockin' Lowell. Dave Loopstra's here, and he's got his banjo, and he's going to play a couple of songs live, including one from the album, one that nobody's heard yet, unless you've... Have you played it live in it?
We've played it live a couple songs. It was our show ender.
Ah,
before and on the album, it has this great part at the end where it's just drums and bass. So live, we would get to that part, and I would have this feeling, and it's all this wonderful feeling of like when you're at the end of a show, and maybe as time goes on, it'll be a feeling of sadness at the end of a show. But for me, I love the last song at the end of a show where you've put on a really good show, and then you get to the last song, and you're like, okay, I'm done, and that was awesome because now I get to revel in, you know, yeah, you're on a high for the next week, right? If you have a bad show, you're on a low that continues until you have a good show. If you have a good show, you're on a high for quite a while. And so so we did play it live once, and we got to that part, and I took my banjo off, and I went and I sat with my family and watched my band play the final four or five bars. So it's pretty rewarding from that regard, yeah.
And that song's called...
That one's Calculator, so I'll play that.
Before you play Calculator live, let's go back to the record for a third cut three on the record. How do you want to set it up?
So, you know, there's the Trailer Park Boys, Randy, which this song is, I forgot that that character exists when I came up with the concept of Randy. And so I will just go segue for a second. The Trailer Park Boys character, Randy, is one of the most hilarious characters I've ever seen. Like,
I do love him.
You know, he plays the part so well. I love the way they interact with him. He's got a big beer belly and he's such a good sport, right? Like, cause he has his big beer belly, and every time Ricky or Bubbles sees him, they're like, when's the baby due, Randy? It cracks me up so much. But that's not what the song... I missed that. You know, I just thought the concept of the name Randy is so funny. I just can't get over how funny that name is. Randy! You know, and I just picture like a bunny rabbit with buck teeth. He's Randy! You know? And so I just had to write the song, and my apologies to anybody who's named Randy or is married to somebody named Randy. I just think it's such a funny name that you can be named something that essentially means horny or Randy. Randy is even better than horny. It's like you're really Randy.
And not Randall or Randolph, but Randy.
No, but Randy.
Here's Glacial Erratic off the new record.
Sometimes I wonder what it'd be like if my name was Randy. Sure, the people would say, hey, is that guy Randy?
Randy every day, Randy every night, he'd be Randy all the time if his name was Randy.
Yeah, I know that I wonder, and I bet that you probably also wonder what it would be like, yeah.
If your name was Randy.
If your name was Randy.
If my name was Randy,
every day, all the time,
I
like baby. I have a dentist appointment and I'm rambling.
Randy at the dentist, Randy in the chair. He's Randy everywhere. He wants to be Randy. Just let him be Randy.
And for those reasons and those reasons only. Yeah. I wish my wife was Randy. It would literally be my name. I get your technicality every time, 'cause my name would literally be Randy. It would be my actual freaking name.
How can you tell when your stage is level, Dave? When the drummer is drooling from both sides of his mouth. I love Mitch. He's a hell of a nice guy. He's gentlemanly and he's a great drummer. What can you add to that?
He's the kind of guy where, you know, you meet him right away and you just love him. Just a force, you know, charismatic. The energy that he brings to us as a band, he does these backup vocals. Another thing that guys do, him and Merrick are unreal, man. Like when they get together in a room, they just catch fire. And Merrick will jump up on the mic and then Mitch will be on the mic and they're ad-libbing. I'm a guy that needs structure and I need to have things planned out. I can't, if you put me in an ad-lib situation, I couldn't even make two words rhyme, you know. But these guys are unreal. The things they say, they have no inhibitions when they jump on the mic. So they'll be jamming away and Mitch will be just singing and ad-libbing, and he brings these ideas musically. And then he'll get up, he'll go outside, grab a beer, and he'll come in, he'll pick up a guitar and he'll rip the most unreal solo that you've ever seen. Like, he's an incredible guitar player. He's one of these guys, he's a movie star, you know. He's you meet him and you're like, wow, he's everything, you know. He's good looking, he's incredibly talented, and he's charismatic, and he's comes from, you know, his great parents and a great family. So he brings the whole thing. But what he brings to the band is just this unbelievable level of energy. But I will say that I've been in bands before and where, you know, you write a song and everybody forgets it. And then it can be, you know, a little disappointing or whatever, but he remembers. And the guys remember the parts. And that's what I think is the key thing in this whole equation. You know, he remembers. Like, even 6 months later, he remembers. And that's flattering to me because these are songs I wrote. And so I'm like, to have somebody care and remember, to me, that's a really nice gesture. You know, I haven't had that before.
I get the distinct feeling that Mitch has done far less drugs than you or I. It's just a hunch.
Or he just holds it together better.
Maybe. Mention you're going to play a couple songs live, and one of them that you talked about was one that factors pretty prominently in your live set, Calculator. Before you pick up your banjo and play, anything you want to say that you haven't already said about it?
really, it's not a deep song at all. I just sometimes I just like to be able to put lyrics into some music that I like. And I have to admit that I'm pretty simple when it comes to music. Like I like minor chords, you know, and I like these sort of sad minor chords, and I can really play around on some of the notes in a minor chord. You know, I don't know if they're fifths or sevenths or whatever they are, but they sound sad. And so I needed some lyrics for it. And then I just thought of, you know, when I was really bored, you know, in grade 5, and I had a watch calculator, and I would just like hit like 10 divided by 3 and just get 3.333333333 and... That's about the extent of the song, you know. But I also find it interesting. If you want to go deeper, I'm like, it's interesting, the whole concept of infinity. Like, really, 10 divided by 3 is 3.333 to infinity, you know. And so that's a little bit mind-blowing, like the concept of numbers. But it's not all that mind-blowing, man.
But it is fun.
Yeah, it is kind of fun, yeah.
All right, and you brought your banjo. And tell me a bit about it before you start playing it.
So I started playing banjo 2016. I've been playing guitar. I picked up a guitar first when I was 15 years old. It was my dad's guitar. Was always hanging around, and I was always banging around on it. He said, "Dave, you can't touch my guitar again until you learn some chords." So I learned some chords, and I've been playing for 30 years. But about 8 years ago, I picked up a banjo. I'd always wanted to play banjo. I love the twang of the banjo. I'm crazy for banjo. It makes me go nuts. That bound. Like that those threes, you know, I just find it to be, it just makes me go nuts. It's like a cat with catnip or something like that. And I'm a huge fan of bluegrass, and especially, you know, the newer bluegrass that you hear. The way that banjo pops, I'm crazy for it. So I knew I wanted to learn. What I can't get over is the picks on your fingers. Real banjo players play with picks on their fingers, and that's what makes those strings really pop against that drum head. And in bluegrass, a banjo has the role of percussion, right? Because it's, you know, it's got the drum head and everything like that. But I just play it with my regular fingers. And for a long time, I felt ashamed about that I felt like I really needed to practice with picks, and I hated it. So I've decided to just embrace playing with my fingers, which is a bit of a concept, you know. Like I've always kind of been different in my life, but what I've learned lately is, if you do something half decent, even though it's different, do you really need to force yourself to learn it a different way or the other way, or do you just express with what you're doing that you're doing half decent? And I figure it's like a right hand or a left hand. If you're right-handed and you do things really well with your right hand, do you need to spend your life trying to train your left hand to be as good as your right hand, or you just really get good at your right hand? And so that's kind of my philosophy now, is trying to play with my banjo and just play with my fingers.
Dave Loopstra of Glacial Erratic performing live here at Wildwoods Blue.
Just two. 513-800 it spells boobies.
Dave Loopstra on the banjo, Calculator. We're still going to play one more live, a song that's not out yet, but we have two more from the studio to get to. One is about the state of Dave physically. But before we get to that, let's bring it to the curb, as it were, with a one-man party. Now, this speaks to a lot of things, including the fact that you're a dad.
True.
How many kids do you have?
True. I have two kids. So it takes up a lot of time. It's a lot of dedication. It's incredible. It's amazing. You know, you learn so much, and you have these wonderful times at home, and you have a busy house, and we have a boy and a girl, and kids are messy, right? And so there's always something to do, you know? And so when they were a little bit younger, certainly, I like to smoke weed. I like to drink beer. I like to play guitar. And so I was always trying to carve out times for myself. I'm not the kind, I'm always busy. So even if I have a moment to myself, I'm not going to like just watch a movie or something like that. I want to do something creative or do something. So it was like my wife would take the kids to karate lessons from 5 until 8. And as soon as she would leave, I'm like, okay, I have 3 hours to myself. Yes. Right. You know, because when I was younger, I had my own room. So I'd go, when I was growing up, I had my own room. So I'd go up to my room and I'd play guitar for hours or whatever. And then I left home and I shared a room, a house with roommates. And then eventually I met Jenny, who became my wife. And so I never really had my own space, right? Until we had kids, and then she would take the kids to karate lessons, and I have 3 hours to myself. So this song kind of addresses that. And I love beer and weed. So I would have a one-man party because I would do these tasks, or I do these tasks, and it's a lot more fun, if you smoke some weed. it's just sort of like dang, and you go off on the next planet, and sometimes I just love hearing my brain. I just need to like think. My brain comes up with all kinds of amazing thoughts when I'm high. Here's the perfect mix: drink 3 beers and then smoke weed, and you will. For me, that's like perfect. I'm on the next planet then. So that's like the one-man party. It sets me into this other dimension where I'm thinking unreal positive thoughts and everything's really working. But then as soon as the family comes home, it's like, holy crap, I'm on Mars. And they're back. So that's where the line, it's over abruptly at 8 because they come in the door at 8 o'clock, right? And so I got to, usually at 7:45, I got to mentally prepare. And by then, the house is fully clean. So the first thing I do is clean the house. Everybody leaves, I clean the whole house, right? And that's sort of what the song is about. It's like, you're having a one-man party, but you're cleaning the house. You're doing some laundry. You're bringing the garbage to the curb. And if there's some time left over, in that case, do some laundry or whatever. But so essentially, that's it. It's
a responsible dad who likes to party, but knows he's got to keep his shit together.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's one-man party, Glacial Erratic, with my man here today, Dave Loopstra.
We'll be right back.
There it is, One Man Party. You mentioned the best sort of combo for you is three beer and then some weed. Now, you're a tall man.
I think it fluctuates between 6'5 and 6'7, depends on how tall I stand up or how much yoga I've done.
So my point is, for me, it would be one beer and some weed. That would be enough. I'm a lightweight.
Uh-huh.
Some people would be just the weed and the beer might throw off their equilibrium. But for you, being as tall as you are, so that would put you at 200 and what pounds?
235 right now.
Right. Uh-huh. So your tolerance is a little more than the average
right.
guy.
Yeah, it depends who I'm with, too. Like, if I'm at the bar, I can have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and like, literally just talk to anybody like normal. Right, but I find if I'm by myself, then it hits me a little bit more. But yeah,
interesting how that would be.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's weird.
It probably depends who you're with too.
Yeah, I think so. You know, if you're in a really social situation, and then maybe that's just my perspective. Whereas other people are like, Dave, you're drooling. Right. So it's interesting being tall because it's one of those things that, it took me a long time to feel comfortable with it. It took me a long time to actually be proud of it. Now I stand up straight and I'm like, okay, I'm tall. I'm noticeable, and I actually really like it. When I watch sports games or like NFL football or basketball, and you look at these characters, you really are gravitated to the ones who are a little, or for me anyway, I'm gravitated to the guys who are a little bit more of a character. Maybe they have an interesting hairstyle, maybe they've got an interesting beard, maybe they've got, you know, something going on, or their body type is different. And if they confidently own it, then I'm more, even more interested in that, as opposed to being ashamed of it, right? And I spent most of my life feeling different, and the reason is you know, I was religious. I was raised very religiously, and we went to Christian school, and I came from a Dutch upbringing, so things were Dutch. We had, like, Dutch traditions, and, you know, I was raised in Burlington, Ontario, and so I felt different from the rest of the people in the community, and then I was also tall. So then when I suddenly was introduced into the public school system when I was in grade 8, I felt very different from everybody and also was tall. And so I really didn't like these parts about myself. And maybe that leads to slouching. Maybe that leads to, you know, compensation in other areas or whatever. But as I've grown up, and, you know, I love it now. And it took a long time, just, you know, whatever, age, maturity. And now I love it. I can stand up straight. But it is interesting, you know, being tall, because it's really the only physical appearance that anybody has where you can observe it and tell that person about it and talk about it. You know, you would never say it to a short person, or you would never say it to somebody with a different type of body. It's only tall people that people will say, whoa, you're really tall. Wow, you're so tall. How tall are you? Or whatever. So that's okay, because I realize that I'm super privileged to be tall. Like, I love it. And so that's okay, you know, but sometimes, man, like, if, you know, if someone's 6'9 or 6'11, you know, they might not feel comfortable being that tall, or, you know, whoa, like everywhere you go.
How's the weather up there? Must be the big one.
Totally. And I've had that, you know, all my life, right? And so that's why I wrote the song. And hopefully people can relate to it. But I'm okay with it now. I'm okay being tall. I love it. I've embraced it. But I do want to make an observation that people should know about that's tall people are the only people you will say that to. And it can get a little tiring. Like, it's not like when someone comes up to me and they say, whoa, you're really tall. Like, I'm like, oh, I forgot. Thanks for reminding me.
You know? Yeah, you don't say, God, you're fat.
Yeah, you wouldn't
or
say
God,
that.
Or,
God,
you're... Right? Ugly.
You know, you wouldn't say that. I almost don't even want to say it here, you know, on the podcast, right? Like, it's like you just never would say that. And so I don't want to say, oh, I have a hardship because people say this about me, because I've really embraced it and I love it. But it really is, you know, it's the only one.
You're really tall. Yeah, 6'6". He's a tall guy. His name's Dave Loopstra. It's new for Glacial Erratic.
Whoa. You're really tall. How tall are you?
6'6".
Do you play basketball?
No, I don't.
What's the weather like up there?
Good one.
Do you have really big feet?
Yep.
I bet you wear like size 15.
No, just 12.
I bet your feet are absolutely enormous.
He's tall.
actually.
Can you come over and hang my Christmas lights? I bet you don't even need a ladder. Make sure you duck when you come through the door.
Yeah, I always do. Huh?
Can you see things that are far away?
Can you see anything from down there?
Do you ride shotgun like every day?
That's your leg room, bud.
Do you have a really big desk?
Oh, good one.
How do your legs even fit under it?
Yeah, real, real funny.
I bet your desk is absolutely enormous.
It does help my ego.
Tall, and you've got it all.
I should credit Mitch with that line, right? So we were talking earlier about Mitch and what he brings to the studio and all these cool ideas, right?
Mitch Urquhart, the drummer.
Our drummer, that's right, yeah. And so that chorus never used to exist. That was just an instrumental. It was just this instrumental, and he was like, we need to put in, he's tall, he's got it all. And luckily for us, at that time, Bam and his girlfriend at the time, Marcia Alderson, Queen M, was at the studio that she was visiting. And Mitch said, can you sing on that track for us? So that's actually Queen M singing that chorus with Mitch. And I have to credit Bam Lam Kid, who joins us all the time on hand percussion. Love Bam so much. To go on a segue here, just there's another guy in our band that joins us live. His name's Jay, and he plays the horn. So I do have to give a shout out to him because he's going to be on our future albums, but he's not on this one. But at any rate, we had Marcia join us in the studio there and come up with that chorus that Mitch came up with, and then Bam's voice carries throughout the rest of the song. But to answer a question, what don't I have? Oh man, that's a tough one. Because I don't want to, I don't want to come across as ungrateful or anything like that. But I think it's important in your life, to have goals that you strive for. And certainly a goal of mine in my life is from a creative perspective, is to be able to output things creatively and to not have to worry about, having to work elsewhere. I just want to be able to output things creatively.
Yeah, me too.
Uh-huh.
This podcast, the other one, the Blue Hotel. It's our love, right? It's our passion. And we have other passions too, but in terms of being creative, there's nothing more fulfilling for those of us who like to be creative than to focus most of our energy and time on that.
That's right. That's right. And it's so fun to play music, just for yourself. And, I was chatting with a friend earlier today and we were talking about the concept of playing music just for yourself and potentially not performing it, for others. And what my friend made me think of at that point is that actually that's okay. Like just play it for your own personal enjoyment, because I actually just love the way that songs sound when I play them. And if that was all, then that's all, and maybe nobody else hears it. But I do think that there's something about, having others be able to enjoy it, that's really important.
I love going to a Glacial Erratic show, because the last one I went to at Collingwood Brewery was just such an inviting room, great space. It was a great crowd. walked in. You know when you walk into a room and you feel like you're supposed to be there?
Yes.
You know, even if you don't know many of the people that are there, it just feels like you're in the right place. And then you guys were already on stage and you were killing it. And I hadn't seen Merrick play before, your guitar player, Merrick Barlow. And the band is on fire like they've never been before. The crowd appreciates it. The drinks were flowing. I highly recommend going to a Glacial Erratic show now more than ever.
That was a great show. That was a fundraiser. So we partnered with an environmental group to raise money for the awareness of the escarpment, which is the land feature in Ontario, which is a really significant and wonderful natural area. And I'm a big believer in natural areas and the preservation of natural areas. Just as a very simple concept, if there's a special natural area, it should just be preserved. And so it's kind of funny to get into the space of what makes it special. But I think as an overarching definition of what's a special natural area, just something that's been natural for a long period of time and not been altered by humans, I'd say 100 years, maybe 120 years, and has a significant number of wildlife or you know, trees that grow there or whatever. And the more places we set aside, and just leave, and we, all I have to do is just leave them, you know. And I'm a big supporter of that. And so that was it was called Escarpment Fest, and it was to raise awareness for the escarpment because there's a lot of pressures on the escarpment. You know, there are businesses out there whose business model depends upon the development of the escarpment. You know,
yeah.
That's in a business, you know, corporation is like an individual, right? So that's that individual, or that's that corporation's, that's part of their business model is to develop the escarpment. And so, so that's okay. But unless we set aside these areas of land to just leave them alone, then there's always going to be pressures. And I'm a big, you know, I'm a big believer in always being for something instead of against something, you know, like, you know, it's always easier to be for something because it feels like there's always something to fight. Like, oh, okay, well, there's, you know, there's a new highway coming in, you know, just north of Toronto around Caledon, and you're going to fight that or you know, there's this pump storage project, you know, over in Meaford, you know, like where they're going to blast a hole in this car, we're going to fight that or whatever. But instead of that, just be like, I am for the preservation of the escarpment. Let's go for that.
Dave Loopster, thanks for coming and sharing new Glacial Erratic music.
And then the album is on Spotify, Apple Music. The best place is probably on Instagram, to be honest. Instagram, Glacial Erratic Music, Bandcamp. We're there if you search Glacial Erratic. You know, we check messages on Instagram all the time.
Let's leave everybody with one more song. It's a track that perhaps you've heard or not heard before, depending on your familiarity with the Glacial Erratic, song called Incident. You want to play it live? You want to pick up your banjo and do
sure,
that?
Sure, love to.
A couple things that you'd like to say before you play it?
It's about a toque that my mother-in-law knit for me, but actually she knit it for my kid and I stole it, but she doesn't knit anything for me, not anymore, not after the incident. But the, I'll just leave it there. It's actually a mystery. Everybody wonders what the incident was.
Here it comes. It's live at Wildwoods Blue. It's Dave Loopster, the Glacial Erratic, and it's The Incident.
for my kid. Yeah, but I stole it.
With that, we say thank you to Dave Loofstra of the Glacial Erratic. Check them out live when you can, particularly in the area of Georgian Bay, Collingwood, Thornbury, Meaford, Owen Sound, and the like. Thanks for coming. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for bringing me a beer. Collingwood White's Bay.
Collingwood White's Bay, one of the best beers in the region. I'm a big fan of craft beer. That's an IPA. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Thank you, David.
Thanks so much, Records and Rockstars, for having me. It's just such an honor to be here. So great to chat with you.
Thank you, David. It was my pleasure.
The Records and Rockstars radio podcast is available every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe for free through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your streaming audio so you never miss an episode. Rate and review to help us spread the word. All this and more at jeffwoodsradio.com.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.